President Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this April the 13th, 2009, or on the East and Central time zones. It is now April the 14th, still 2009. Well, we're back from a long weekend. Hope everyone had a great holiday. However, you pass such holidays. Seems like more and more people are waking up to the truth, so our traditional holidays are being understood for what they really are, and people are finding meaningful ways to celebrate beyond burying candy eggs in the backyard. And With the global warming and the snow and the rain that we have everywhere, makes that even all the more fun, because you've got to put on your knee-high boots so you don't drown in your backyard, and probably have to bring a fishing pole as well. Some parts of the country are still going through quite a bit of flooding, although you don't hear much about it anymore. There are these issues of rising rivers. We seem to forget what's happening to people when we go into holiday mode, and you know, consider the people that are out somewhere in the wilderness living in a tent without running water, without food, without any money, and trying to get over the grief of having lost their home. That's just one of the many games being played on people around the country. It's not really an update. I was alerted to a document that was posted on Hal Turner's website. Now, Hal Turner is the guy that claims he was forced to cease his radio show. He's a former talk show host, and he still has a blog site. And he had posted a Homeland Security report dated April 7th, 2009. And I had an extra 5 minutes to read through this document. It was some 10 pages or so of what I call drivel. Basically taking every corrupt action and turning it into a reason to go after anyone who's speaking the truth about the corruption or the lies that are told about what's really happening. And they referred, even in one particular subtitle paragraph section, that Barack Obama, being the first African-American president to be elected in the United States, was reason for right-wing extreme terrorists to take action, and that they should be on alert for this. It was amazing. They used the mortgage scandal as a reason for arresting people as terrorists. Although we've discussed ad nauseum on this show the fact that the banks and the holding companies and many of the criminals in Washington, D.C. have orchestrated this, and they're using the internet to carry this fraud around the world, and they blame it on these people living in the tents. Think about that. It's disgusting what's being said, and that they can just search and search and search for more reasons to take freedom away, and always under the guise of terrorism. Well, people are waking up to this slowly but surely. I'm sure the people living in the tents have by now figured out what's going on, And many of you who consider yourselves knowledgeable about these things should really look into it a bit more. My special thanks go out to Dave in Washington, who alerted me to this particular piece of literature put out by Homeland Security. Even though it was unclassified, it was called, it was labeled for official use only. So I guess I must declare that I'm officially using it to be able to talk about it on this show. So I have done that. With that, I bring tonight's guest on board. In fact, we have some great shows lined up all week long, and I'm going to quickly refer you to the shows throughout the rest of the week. Tomorrow evening, we have Mr. Michael Anthony joining us. On Wednesday, Ken Adachi. New guest, also a BBS radio talk show host on Saturdays, Dr. Christopher Holmes will be my guest on the 16th. And on Friday, as usual, scientist inventor Jim Murray. Tonight's guest has been on before, and I brought him on tonight so that we could continue our discussion about the Constitution, laws, maybe in respect to the history, and some new insights as to how we can reclaim our sovereignty. With that, I welcome back to Evident Footprints again my good friend Greg Pappas. Greg, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. It's a pleasure and honor to be on with you again tonight.
Okay, Greg, I got to make sure you speak up because you sound a little bit softer than you did when we were doing our sound check.
Okay, sorry. Let me see. Is this any better?
That's a little bit better.
Okay, well, I'll speak louder then. How's that? I'll just boost my voice.
All right. How are you doing this evening?
Very good. I really appreciate your introduction, actually, about the people who lost their homes and living in tents becoming considered terrorists. That flabbergasted me, that the people who tricked all those people to take those mortgages to begin with would then have the gall to actually consider them a threat after they've taken all their energy and everything else that they put into either a deposit or a down payment into those properties, drive them out of the places, and then consider them a threat. I guess that's about the ultimate opposite of reality that we could actually have, right? Especially the people who lost the homes are the ones that actually created the money to begin with to have the banks lend them something.
Yes. Yes. Well, you know, they're labeling the people who are speaking out as right-wing extremists. Now, I guess that definitely sounds like a political statement. For one thing,
yes.
Right. I don't know that the right wing and the left wing are that different, other than they're on opposing sides of birds, airplanes, and other flying things. Yet the right wing extremists. Now, what is an extremist? Is that someone that has a big or a large a right wing, or a large left wing?
If you can have a large one on the left one, you got to have a large one on the right. Otherwise, it's going to be out of balance.
Yeah, or I suppose if you have a big appetite, that you would be considered an extremist. Or
yes.
Or if you like sleeping a long time.
That would be an extremist.
Yeah, they're just inventing the terms as they go along. Now, while that's going on, if I might just add a little caveat here, there's ongoing reporting about attempts to steal the money, or the gold, I should say, in Fort Knox, and there may only be about $1 trillion in Fort Knox. There should be substantially more than that, but most of it's been stolen and hidden elsewhere, sunken ships, foreign countries, like the Philippines, for example. But we know many of the places where this gold has gone. They stole a bunch of it on 9/11. They stole a bunch of it from the Iraqi government from the Iraqi Central Bank when they raided Iraq in 2003. There are countless stories of and supporting documentation of the similar thefts occurring from banks in Switzerland. This is all smoke and mirrors. And so while this is going on, they have to come out with something to give the people another worry, you know. And we're going to try to veer away from that now and get into some meat about what is going on. And you and I covered that to an extent the last time you were on the show, and I would like to continue that.
Great. Well, I don't remember exactly where we left off, but I would like to.
Have a night filled with love and light, and have a good night. I think that was the last thing I said.
Well, since I did your show the last time, I have had a night and a life filled with light and love, and so I have to admit that I actually have been feeling better since we were actually even that night. But on a serious note, I don't know whether I've actually said this on your discussion in my discussions with you before on the air. So if I'm saying this again, then let me forgive me. But I guess the quote from Franklin Roosevelt on January 3rd, 1935, is the premise of the way I look at everything on the planet these days, and that would be this quote. It was to a joint session of Congress with the Supreme Court present, and it's in the Congressional Record. And the quote is, "We have substituted the illusion of reality for reality itself." That, to me, is the evidence of everything that we see in this world, at least as it's presented to us by those in authority, being an exact opposite, in essence, of what it really means. And so for me, every time I hear something that, you know, like your introduction or something else of a potential calamity coming on, or who it's blamed on, like you said, the right wing or the left wing or the right wing extremists, I always thought right wing extremists were considered fascists and left wing extremists were considered communists. And then as we learned, they end up becoming like capitalism, extreme communism, flip sides of the same coin, right? So if that's what we're looking at, then I guess the thing for me to find is, where are the people like yourself and myself and those, besides those that are in your audience and others, those that are awake or awakening, how come that we're not generally questioning everything that we're told, Don, and from the media or government or educators or religious leaders or any other source? I'll throw that one back at you for a second. Why is it that nobody questions anything except for a few of us?
Well, we could talk about that during this whole show and a whole series of shows, but we have covered that.
Right.
Number one, starting in childhood, people's consciousness in terms of the spiritual knowledge that they come here with is suppressed. It's suppressed through the method called education. It's suppressed through religion. It's suppressed by the societal constructs that are designed to keep us in line, to keep us thinking a certain way and keep us behaving a certain way. Now, what happens is, while there's all this corruption going on, they keep us busy with entertainment, whether it's music, movies, TV shows, news broadcasts, sporting events, both live and televised, and a lot of nonsense, a lot of nonsensical stuff that is presented to us, you know, prefaced with the word reality. I'd like to see a reality news show now. That's the only one they haven't invented yet. Reality Congress, Reality Senate. I mean, in a sense, it's just as ridiculous what we're seeing there as what you see on these reality shows on MTV or any of the other networks. I don't want to single out MTV. But there's quite a bit of insanity that's presented to us, and somehow we're supposed to translate this or decipher this as to find some underlying message, some deeper meaning, and so you have all this chaos and all this confusion, people who are being literally pulled by a ring in their nose to look and think and talk and speak and listen. When I say talk and speak, I guess I'm saying the same thing, but there's nonsensical talk and there's those that think they have a good handle on this reality that's been created for them. And so when they hear us speak about things that we have spent a lot of time researching, they draw conclusions that we must be crazy. Why? Because what we're saying is so different from how they've been conditioned. They've been so conditioned, so brainwashed or mind-controlled or propagandized that they are unaware of who they are, and all they know is what they've been made to think through all these different systems that are constantly vying for their power, their personal power. So if I answered that question in that yes. that several sentences, I hope I did.
That is part of the discussions that we've had before on and off the air, and I don't know. I like to hear you sum it up. It really puts into perspective. And I today I was out with a friend, and we had gone to a chain box store, large warehouse type store, and in the store we were observing people, and one of the comments we had made was that when in our childhood back in the late 50s and early 60s, we remembered what people looked like from a young person's perspective, and that was that people generally looked relatively normal. I mean, most people could walk okay, and they were at moderate, height and weight ratios, and they were there was just seemed like somewhat of a normalcy with people, even though that was obviously post World War II and Korea and the beginning of the Vietnam era. But what we observed is that it appears that I thought that life, at least we were led to believe that people were disconnected before from reality, or as to quote Agent Smith in the movie The Matrix, oblivious. I thought they were oblivious before, but I've never seen anything like I see today in the look of people's faces that are exhibiting complete obliviousness from reality or complete disconnect from what's going on. And yet mm-hmm. people blindly purchasing things and doing things without thinking about it. And I guess what gets me, the disconnect gets me the most, is like you at the very beginning about people being thrown out of their homes and the rest of us really not doing anything about it. In other words, we're told to have Christian love and to care for other people, and yet, in general, I don't see any attempt to change this. And I don't want to toot my horn or maybe say that we've got the answers and other people don't, but one of the things that troubled me was before this run-up took place, I remember it was back in 99 when Bill Clinton was still president, and I remembered thinking that this economic collapse had to happen because the 70-year cycle had run its course and had been able to extend the debt from the supposed collapsing of the banks in the mid-80s, which was stopped by the derivatives market, and then, of course, the 95 Orange County, California collapse, which I thought that was going to be the beginning of the unraveling. And of course, I didn't know anything about credit default swaps and any of that stuff. But what transpired in 99, I thought that was going to be the end of it. And I thought people would wake up. So people were scrambling for Y2K, food, and we had opportunists and all types of radio stations and networks doing things. And of course, that didn't come to fruition the way it was supposed to, except for completing the task of getting everybody to buy new computers. Other than that, and buying a lot of stored food and things, and then making us all complacent. So when they would pull off the actual event, nobody would actually know what happened. So instead of people staying on guard in 1999, 2000, 2001, when 9/11 took place, and obviously if I could debate the events of that, we know what that was. But the first things coming out of George W. Bush's mouth was, well, go out and spend. It's like, spend what? Mm-hmm. No, there was nothing to spend. There was no legitimate run-up in real estate prices. Earnings had dropped since, what, the mid-70s, mid to late 70s, on a proportional basis. And yet by 2003, after not only going to Afghanistan but into Iraq, Alan Greenspan comes out after reducing all the restrictions on the banking industry. He comes out and says, well, everybody go out there and borrow, borrow, borrow. The real estate run is on. And he makes that announcement, and all of a sudden, appraisers and real estate agents and brokers and supposed lenders are going crazy, and real estate prices are running up. And I sat, and I did a few shows back then, and I would go on the air, and I'd go, come on, tell everybody, this is absolutely insane. Don't participate in this. And you know what made it even worse? Is a lot of my friends that knew it was a fraud, they jumped in too, Don. And I, to this day, I don't understand what happened. But they all jumped in and thought, well, and then I had many of them coming to me and saying, well, Greg, after all these years, you know, you've been warning us about stuff for 20 years, and none of these things happened the way it was. You know, we just had to tell you that we think you're crazy. And that we're going to participate in this game. And I asked them all. I said, tell me, what's real about this whole thing? What has changed? Where is their the new American dream? Where do people have an opportunity to grow in earnings and to stay ahead of this thing? But oh no, the industries that were growing were based on the medical cartels of our destroying ourselves with bad food and drug addictions, both legal and illegal. And all these things were going on, and yet I was wrong. Well, you and I both know, starting in about 2 years later, back in 2005, 2006, this bubble started to be let out, and the disaster that we've seen now that has taken place. But here's the ultimate irony, Don, and I don't mean to sound this sarcastically, the run-up was phony and the collapse is phony. In other words, there was nothing really justifying the run-up, but somehow all the land in America has been transferred, like it was under the Carter administration, from the farmers to the bankers. All the rest of the residential properties in this country have all been transferred from the people who have been working to own these overpriced properties to the bankers as well. It almost appears, unless I'm wrong, that this was all orchestrated ahead of time to make it appear that a corporation which cannot own anything tangible, or a group of corporations that cannot own anything tangible, have now taken full control of the entire, at least we know of the United States of America, but are attempting to take control of the entire planet through defaults on mortgages and real estate transactions that, to me, were completely fraudulent from the very beginning. I didn't mean to take that long to say that, but anyway.
No, that's fine. I'm going to agree with what you said. In fact, they did it by pretending that they owned it and pretending that they had acquired the value, and that the acquired value could be put onto the market as a source of generating further profits.
Yes.
And they skimmed those profits. They put those profits in offshore accounts. And basically the money was stolen, and by international law they have to show source of funds, which they cannot do because it's all through corruption. And that's the reason for the bailout. Now, pretending is an important word, and I think that's the first time I've actually used it in that context. You know, it's what we call the Hegelian dialectic, okay, showing us one thing or showing us the opposite of that one thing, and neither are true. They're just diversion attempts. When we were children, and this goes along with my first response to your question about what I think has happened, or why people aren't getting the picture. Why are they so disconnected from the true reality of what's going on? When we were children, they would have us play a game called make-believe. Do you recall that? Having
Oh,
heard
of course.
That? In, okay, now as adults, it's just believe. They take the word make out of it because the word make-believe is for kids. And they figure once you've made it to adulthood that they can extract that word, and you're now fully in the belief system. Okay, so it's all the way through mind control. And it's done through deception. It's done, and that deception means lying, cheating, stealing, etc. Okay, and in fact, they don't stop short of murder to eliminate certain people that are in their way. It's they're notorious for it. Of course, that's referred to. Murder has now taken on a new term, and it's the S word, suicide. Okay.
Yes.
Evidently, there's a rash of people that just commit suicide So if you don't want to commit suicide, don't know anything about the government corruption, or the corruption in the banking industry, or any of the other corporate powers that be that want to control the whole planet. That's what we're up against, and there is a spirit. There's an evil spirit behind that.
Yes.
You brought up a point about defending ourselves. Stop. Think of that. Why should we have to defend ourselves, or from our government? Why should we be concerned about that? And yet that is really the crux of what this whole problem is: the corruption and the collusion between big business and the banks and government is the whole problem. Why should we fear that? Why should we have to fear that at all? Give me one plausible reason why that should be a priority.
Go ahead.
And that's what it is. That's all I was going to say. Go ahead.
No, there's a... Before I comment, I just want to let you know that my local broadcaster who was carrying you after the word Hegelian dialectic was said, lost the signal for some reason. So I don't know. I hope it didn't affect you guys on your main broadcast. That's all. I just want to let you know that. Because, anyways, but back to the
point. Well,
they
don't. The gatekeepers don't even know what that word means. Don't worry about that.
Well, that's true. That's very true. That's true. Although, was it last Tuesday night we got cut in the middle of a powerful statement too? So at least my line got dropped off last time. Maybe what? Anyways, but I think what's happening is that if we all were to wake up, it would be a miracle if everybody would start seeing that something was wrong. But even those of us that are awake, I've been wrestling with what kind of power we actually have in us, and I'm having to revert back. Well, you said earlier about believe. Let me address this first: believe and make believe. The term rolls off our tongues. It's a way to get us into and I hate to say this in a negative sense because there are positive things here about God and our relationship with God, and you and I both understand the power of the Creator in what's motivated us to be where we're at today. But most people get into a church or religious setting are given a few things, like they'll take verses out of the Bible and they'll show a belief system based on that, and because most people don't read anything, they don't understand history, they don't understand the basics of hermeneutics and soteriology and these other purposes behind certain teachings or what the motivation is, and because people want to believe that their teachers are spiritually honest and intellectually honest, they're given certain things to learn, and then they say they believe them. Because I'm guilty of this, Don. I've done it in the past where I said I believed certain things, and then my spirit inside of me from the Spirit of God would start rising up and say, are you sure? Or somebody would confront me and say, are you sure? Are you certain about this? And I finally started going, well, how do I know if I'm certain? Well, when I went to seminary, I was trained a little bit in the Greek and Hebrew. I was trained how to use certain study guides. And then I learned on my own later on that the key to language is what the words mean, not just the sentence structure and the tense that it's used in the sentence, but actually the meaning of the word. Because if somebody could even give you the proper tenses, of the Greek language, if I did not have the ability to know what that word means, I let's say James Strong made a mistake in his 1890 dictionary, along with as part of his exhaustive concordance. If he made a mistake, and let's say he drew his mistake from Noah Webster's 1828 unabridged dictionary of the English language, and let's say that was a mistake, well, that mistake would then be carried forward into James Strong's work, which would be carried forward into the doctrines of the 20th century. And so it really started playing with my head that I had to know what these things meant. So then I couldn't so easily say I believed something without first checking it out and being able to define what those things were. And that's when it set me off on this massive study that shook me to my core. And, of course, that's when I got into words like sin and debt and what salvation means and all these other terminology that still are automatically flowing off ministers and Christians' lips. And I'm not going to go through a preaching thing on this subject tonight, but what I want to relate to this thing about belief is, if I'd rather know something to be true based on evidence, or at the very least, based on a conviction that I can put my hand on or place on. Like, I don't have to be, and I'm not saying I was at the crucifixion or the resurrection or anything else, and I'm not denying this at all. But I had to question, though, when I got to the Council of Nicaea in 325, and all the data that existed prior to 325 all of a sudden disappears. You know, I mean, how is it that we have all this work from antiquity coming up through the time of Christ, and the Gospels we have and the writings of Paul and the other apostles up until about 70 A.D., and all of a sudden there's this giant gap between 70 A.D. and 325 A.D.? Can I not then infer that there is a problem? Whatever that problem is, I have to infer that. So when I have my beliefs predicated on an Nicene Council from 325 AD, convened by a Constantine, and then all the doctrines of the Church are derived from that, can I not conclude that there might be something wrong with what I might be believing if there's a gap missing of around 300 years or at least 250 years between these events? And
yeah,
that's what's troubled me, Don.
Well, you know, often when we get into these types of discourses, and there are the doubting Thomases, to use a a biblical phrase,
yes.
These people will say, well, you know, back in those days they didn't keep good records. As if they do now,
yeah,
you know.
<that's>
as if they do now, especially in the financial community, where they've got double and triple sets of books. If they even have those, you know, there's absolutely no accountability. So don't tell me about records. We found records 10,000 years older or more. I mean,
yes.
And they're not always in books or on pieces of paper. You know, so.
Agree. The records we have today, well, just speaking of the financial aspect of things, I remember trying to read prospectuses back in 1980s, starting in the 70s, but in the 80s I was working in the business for a short time in the financial field, and I would read these things going, now wait a minute, I'm an intelligent man, I've worked on a master's degree, and I don't have a clue what this is talking about. And then when I started getting my financial statements, I would run the numbers, and they would tell me what the rates of returns were. And I'd look at this, and I even try to factor in expenses and everything else that the fund put in, like on a mutual fund. None of the numbers ever added up even close to what they were projecting or putting in Money Magazine or Forbes or Fortune Magazine. It was all ludicrous. Nothing matched. And I'm going, and I'm selling this stuff to people to get them to invest in something, and I'm told that owning a yellow metal or a silver metal, gold or silver, is dangerous and risky. And as you said about the gold being gone, isn't it funny that ultimately, after all is said and done, after they've got everybody to exchange their labor for worthless pieces of paper with no accurate accounting records, with the big accounting firms all being duplicitous and committing the fraud, hiding everything, and let's face it, they couldn't have kept up with this anyways, based on the derivatives and the credit default swap extension up to what they estimating $2,000 trillion is possible, at least $1,000 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how could any accountant even have a computer big enough to handle those numbers? To me, it just shows that there was an absolute plan to control all the tangible resources of the earth: water, food, land, and precious metals, and then basically leave the people with nothing, and then make them ultimately feel guilty, like the day, or to give them platitudes, like the day that Barack Obama made that speech. I think it was in Chicago or somewhere in the Midwest, where there's an old black woman who had a tender heart, got in front of a microphone, and asked him if he would help her, because now they were living in their car, and all she would like to have is a bathroom and a kitchen. And he went up to her in the gall to give her a hug and say, well, we're doing all the best we can. Yeah, we're doing all the best we can to make sure we take every last thing there is.
Mm-hmm. And he recently flew a pizza maker from, I think it was St. Louis, all the way to Washington, D.C., to make a pizza for him. You know?
This is a guy who's supposed to have had humble beginnings. And we were complaining about Bill Clinton getting a haircut on the tarmac at LAX and holding up airplanes, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. He recently did that. In fact, I have a new page on my website, directlightproductions.com, called Breaking Stories. And basically what it is some links to some rather interesting articles that deal with everything out there, let's say on the fringe, but it all ties into the corruption and the doublespeak that we're hearing from all these people. And I have another sidelight here. I am completing a piece on the analysis of the Obama photos, which is very, very revealing.
Great.
And I'm showing all the obfuscation in how these photos were published, how they were presented to us. Because when you restore them back to what they probably were in their original state, you can see that they have created compilations of people in these photos. That in some of the photos, nearly every person is put into the photo one at a time electronically. And it's very easy to analyze the shadows and the lights, and they become almost 3D when you raise the lighting. It removes a lot of the masking techniques that they used. You'll see in one picture where Barack Obama is sitting on a park bench with his so-called grandparents. His left leg is about 6 inches longer from the hip to the knee than his right leg. It is amazing. And when you start comparing angles and heights and widths and all these things, nothing makes sense. His grandfather in that same picture appears to have the makings of two arms and two hands, although he can bend his arm and raise his hand without raising the arm at the shoulder. Now, I mean, we can all do that when we hold our hand up. Let's say to take an oath, we're doing that, but we can't extend our hand very far away from our body, which he's doing by placing his hand around his so-called grandson's shoulder. That raises the shoulder instantly, yet you can see his arm is hanging down at the side. It's a fabrication. It's a fabricated picture.
Yes.
And I'm surprised that no one noticed that. No one in the whole world noticed that.
It's you know what it's from, don't you? People have been conditioned to not believe what they see until somebody of authority in the media or the government tells them what they saw.
Well, of course.
Even if they see it, they can't see it.
Yeah, I think I covered that somewhat in my explanation before, although, you know, you elaborated on it. That's what mind control is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Brainwashing. I mean, people cannot independently think for themselves. They have to be shown these things. Now, clearly, when I analyze these anomalies, and there are tons of them in each photograph, I've studied them so thoroughly that I can tell you how these images were placed into the picture and what order. One must assume that a certain number of people were in the original photo. But I've never seen a basketball team with so many different colored uniforms. In fact, they released a black and white version, and when you restore the color, they're all different shades. Like somebody put too much bleach in a batch of clothes that shouldn't have even had any bleach, you know. And shadows existing where shadows should absolutely not exist. This is in all of the photos. These same anomalies are there. So be looking for that. That's another one that's coming out. And then some revelations as to the likely father of Barack Obama. And I can tell you he's not from Africa.
Could he be from a certain elite family, huh?
Oh, well, we don't want to give away any clues, do
okay.
we?
Okay.
But that could be anybody, couldn't it?
It could be. I was going to make a comment back on what you said earlier, when we were talking about Barack Obama flying in the pizza maker.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of reminds me of a quote from a very famous French queen. I think her name was Marie Antoinette. In fact, this is more an action as opposed to words. We have her quote because of the words she said about what the people could eat. But don't you get a feeling that there seems to be a similarity of a disconnect here? From this comment of bringing in or from the event of bringing in a pizza maker to let the people eat cake.
Let them eat cake, yes. And that was considered bread, I think, at the time, you know. That didn't mean cake like we eat it, you know, birthday cake or something. I think that just meant ordinary bread.
Right. Oh, even if that's what it meant, it still was part of something that ultimately gave her an ultimate consequence when the people, or at least certain people, woke up as to what was taking place. But I'm not advocating anything here, but just it would be nice that if the people would wake up and get a glimpse. But again, you know, Don, I think part of it, though, and this is not an excuse for people, but it gets back to the programming, that people just automatically get up every morning, and because it's easier just to go, you know, get dressed and have breakfast and get ready to get out the door and go to work, it's a lot easier to have gone through supposedly your preparation of life and then just go do it on autopilot than it is to think about what the consequences are if nothing is there, like after you've done your work. In other words, go into work every day and then end up with not getting a paycheck. And I think that's what's happening. But it's easier, and especially since in our society we're trained to compete with each other as opposed to love one another, like the scripture says, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, and therefore all things whatsoever you desire that men should do to you, so you should do to them, for this is the law and the prophets there in Matthew 7:12. If this would be the case, then I think we'd look at things differently, but it's one thing to have something in a philosophical or esoteric sense understood and even memorized. It's another thing to be able to practice it. And I think the net result is does the philosophy of helping each other ultimately come out to provide food and shelter for us at the end of the day? I think if it were to be practiced in an honorable way, it would, but I think that if it was the way we're seeing it today, it's left us with with a doubt as to whether we're actually going to be having the things and the necessities that we need. So we kind of like blindly act like everything's okay, go about our business for the day, and then not knowing that we just had our pocket picked another day, and when a disaster does strike, we're not prepared for it.
Mm-hmm. Now, yeah, and while you're saying that, you're reminding me of another story that I read actually this evening, that the I'm paraphrasing it, the food police have decided to clamp down on an Amish church that was serving homemade pie and milk, that these foods are unsafe. I suppose they're comparing that to the Monsanto genetically modified corn, for instance. The level of insanity and corruption is unending. It just escalates.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I was just going to say they're probably serving organically grown products and natural raw milk, which, as you and I both know, is obviously healthy, and we can't have anybody being healthy. So we got to serve them the stuff they make at the little bakeries in these supermarkets filled with every chemical known to man, right?
Yeah. And now you have this legislation. With all this, all the world's problems, they have to go after these people that are baking pies and serving milk.
Oh my God.
Stop and think, that this is not what it's being portrayed to be, okay, number one. This is a gradual clamping down on anybody that's self-sufficient and chooses to opt out of the system, okay, for a variety of reasons, health being the major one, most likely. And then the expense or the expenditure and the fact that people have a right to choose what they're going to put in their body. But they're creating all of this legislation. Now, we have a usurper in office. We have someone that cannot prove that they're American whatsoever. They cannot prove they're African either. They're not African American. And yet sitting in the White House under this myth that they're the president of the United States, as if they're the leader of the people, when in reality, he may have been appointed the president of the United States Corporation. Okay?
Yes.
And there's a distinction between the two. Do you want to expound on that a little bit? Because I'd
just
like
briefly,
to get... Yeah.
I'd be happy to, yes. As you pointed out before, and I've talked about, the United States oath, the oath that Barack Obama took and everything that was said at that inauguration was referring only to the United States. It was not referring to the United States of America. And I would like to expand. This is a perfect opportunity. Thank you. I'd like to cite a case. It's William Dixon versus United States. It's an 1811 case, Supreme Court case before Justice Marshall. I think it's 11 pages, and it may be available on the Internet. I'm almost positive it is. But it's William Dixon versus United States. And in that case, Justice Marshall stated that the United States of America is the grand old corporation. And I'm going to say that again. The United States of America is the grand old corporation, and that the United States of America has a right of contracting, of owning property, suing and being sued, and a number of other issues are listed there as well. But this used to trouble me years ago, well, actually up until recently, when I would say the United States of America can't be a corporation. But now that I understand what a corporation is and what its purpose was, to operate in trust as a trustee for its for the people who were the beneficiaries, and I understand now that it was supposed to operate in good faith. And of course, the people can create a corporation, because government is nothing more than a corporation, if we would really get right down to it. It's supposed to do the will of the people, and so on and so forth. Well, the United States, as Barack Obama swore an oath to, is not an incorporation, because not a corporation. And the reason that is because it was created by a corporation. In other words, a corporation cannot create a corporation, but people can create a corporation. A corporation can only create an unincorporated entity. And I'm going to say this slowly if I can, but what I believe the United States is, and this is not my study, this is the work of several other men's research, including Lee Brobst and Dennis Craig Bynum and a great number of other researchers. So this is, I'm just paraphrasing what I've learned from other scholars. And that is this. What they have created is not only not an incorporation like the original United States of America, but it is the following. Foreign, private, unincorporated, implied, charitable trust. And I say it again. It's foreign, private, unincorporated, implied, charitable trust. And that would fall under the parameters of a Roman civil law or private municipal law, and literally is nothing to do with the United States of America. So what Barack Obama swore an oath to, Don, was literally an oath to protect a foreign, private, unincorporated, implied, charitable trust, which we've all been, through trickery and deceit, become parties to, I should say, and or victims of, in our ignorance to this issue. In fact, I don't mean to berate and to slander and to libel the names and the lives of those that have given their lives in at least in the desire to help protect this country, but I just to say this: men and women who serve in the military and have risked their lives and given their lives, which they thought was for a valiant cause of protecting the freedoms for the people of the United States of America, have really been just doing the bidding of a foreign, private, unincorporated, implied charitable trust, and those agents who have masqueraded as if they are the same entity of the United States of America. So all that answer is to say that Barack Obama is not the president of the United States of America. He's simply the president of a United States foreign, private, unincorporated, implied charitable trust, which controls right now companies like U.S. Arms and the major legal and illegal drug traffickers in the world, and other things like that. Things like Halliburton and Blackwater, who's now called XE or pronounced Z. These are the types of things that these guys represent, and that is really all that Barack Obama is the president of.
Mm-hmm. And that's not by any means through a political election. He was appointed that position, which is why they refused to show any documentation, you see, because the people will not stand for that. That will bring everyone to the realization of what you just described.
Yes, exactly. Well, that is the reason why this was never discussed. This is why none of the candidates would discuss this. This is why somebody like Ron Paul would never discuss the things that would actually show all these LinkedIns, you know, to the real problem. The real problem, I mean, the fact that the man ignored the events of 9/11 or would ever address these issues of these other things. Now, I'm not saying he would have survived it had he done it, so maybe he couldn't say it anyways. Maybe there are certain rules and things he could say. But anything else, these were never brought on the table in the major media because obviously the people that own or control this foreign, private, unincorporated, implied charitable trust, known as the United States and its Municipal Corporation, District of Columbia, they're not about to reveal this. And of course, this coming out, I don't even know what would happen to this country right now if this became common knowledge. I don't even know if most people's eyes would glaze over. You know, even if we just said it's an unincorporated trust, if we just use those two words, left all the rest of it out, would that even mean anything to anybody? You know, but I do know this much. In my studies and things we've talked about in the past, and in my conversations recently with Lee Brobst, I believe that, at least from what I'm seeing, and this discussion is just getting going, we might be able to actually individually separate ourselves from these presumptions, and in doing so, force the powers that be within the legal system to let us live our lives freely. So I would put out a little twinge or a little focus or specter of hope on a solution, and it's something that we are working on now through a couple court cases and in practice. So if we could, first of all, let's look at this. Let's take one simple thing: land. If we could control some land, that would be the beginning of a freeing for us. In other words, if we could take our properties off, some properties off our property tax rolls, or to show that a property that somebody in some alphabet soup agency, administrative part of the world, an agency of the government would try to take, and we can keep them from taking it, that would be a plus. And that would, to me, would just be the beginning of being able to establish some form of freedom for each of us. So for example, the land patent. We think that there's still a connection to our land patents that were created, you know, in the past, and we're supposedly don't exist. Well, we're told they don't exist, but again, look at the language in your deed of trust or a note. It still has land patent language in there, like the word grant, grantor, granted, grantee. Those are all words about gifting something, but the use of the word grant goes back to the land grants and the land patents. So I'm thinking that. And like I'll throw one out there. I think I may have said this last week, and I'm repeating myself. But like the words security agreement or lender or borrower in a deed of trust, with those in quotation marks, being undefined in the body of the contract. You know, does that mean the opposite of what the word means? And could just a discussion of this cause people to find ways to protect themselves and to keep from being thrown out of their homes and living in tents? You know, we have a problem in some states, Don, like in the West. I know it's not the case in Ohio and some of the Midwest states, but I know that in California and Washington and Idaho, there's the foreclosure is a presumption, and it's a non-judicial process for foreclosure. So in other words, it's almost like once you go into escrow in these states, you sign the escrow papers, you've already put your home into foreclosure, and if you miss, quote-unquote, discharging through a payment each month for 3 months or 90 days, they will begin the foreclosure process, which is immediate without having to go to court, and automatically takes it over. So we have we need to find some ways to take what I said earlier about speculating about the instruments themselves being fraudulent, and then be able to find a way to lawfully stop the foreclosure, which is almost on autopilot, from taking place.
Mm-hmm. They use terms in law like, you know, possession is 90% of the law, okay? When you are told you are being loaned money, you're being loaned something of value, it's construed to mean of value to everyone and equally. In other words, whether the bank has a dollar or I have a dollar, I'm as rich as the bank, or one is led to believe, but the bank is given the power to place a debt on that money, where I am not. I can attempt to negotiate it, but they can use the language that I don't have the right. So if they're giving me or you or anyone out there in a listening audience a piece of property under a contract, if those are debt instruments and they're not even giving you those are line item ledgers that are being filled in under rules that the Federal Reserve Bank sets up. Used to be 10% of that cash that they're loaning had to be on deposit in the bank. Now, where did the rest of the money come from? Well, that debt was assigned to the bank, to the borrower. I'm using that term so the listening audience can follow, even though that money never took place. So you weren't really borrowing $100,000. You borrowed $2,000, which it's down to now. They only have to have 2%. So on a $100,000 house, they own 2% and you own 98%. They gave it to you.
They did, and that's a great example. I think that we and since we created it, and there's nothing in the ledger account. If we were to go to each financial institution and that they claim that they're going to take something over, where's the ledger account? Where was the original ledger account that shows that there was something of substance? For substance, in other words, we know that property, the land is substance, but of course they call it real estate. They don't call it land. They don't call it earth. They don't call it soil. They call it real estate. And of course, go back to your concept of reality earlier in our discussion, Don.
I was going to refer to that.
They call it. You and I think a lot alike. Here's the word real estate. But it's not, it's anything but real. It's a complete fraud. Here, I'll bet you anything, if we were to look at the historical use of this phrase real estate, it's in quotation marks also, meaning the exact opposite of what it's supposed to mean to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's like everything is the exact opposite of what, so the terms are there, everything's fraudulent, and again, I mean, this is kind of funny. We've shown the whole fraud. In a simple little discussion, they lend nothing, they offer nothing, they take substance, they take our energy, which is like in the movie The Matrix again, as the first scene where I forgot her name now, they're in the town car, she turns around and she's take off your coat, copper top, she calls him copper top, and then Morpheus later on in the construct, he lifts up the, after he tells him that our bodies produce more, I think energy or
electricity, power, yeah.
Right, electricity than 25,000 or 20. Let's see, 20,000. Was it a 25,000 volt battery or something like that? It was a 25,000 BTUs of body heat. That's it. 120 volt battery, and then he holds up the Duracell copper top battery and says, "To turn a human being into this." And you see Neo's reaction when he flips out and has to be pulled out because he can't. This is what I think we're up against. If people only woke up and realized that nothing of substance was lent for substance, then how can they take control of substance when nothing was lent? And I'm going to quote Lee on this one. Lee would say it's because they're able to make the nexus presumption based on our Social Security account, which to the powers that be under this illusory government believe is our contract into this 14th Amendment presumption of being above the soil or in the world and then living in the world of fantasy called real estate.
Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% certain, but I would venture a guess that prior to Social Security, they were doing the same thing.
I think you're right. I suspect that there was a way to do this because I all my studies took me to was like before 1933, and what I found it was a personal family deal. I remember my father, who's 92 years old, telling me that his father had purchased a property to build a home on, and I think it was 1920, and it was a 7-year loan to buy the land and put a little house on it. They all lived in this little tiny a house. And then after they paid that off, they built a larger house, and then for 7 years. And after that was paid off, they built an addition on that place. So after, that's 21 years, they owned everything outright. But as far as the property taxes goes, I'm not clear whether property taxes mm-hmm. could cause a property to be seized by the county or the state back then either. So it probably
yeah.
was.
Here's another thought now. The average American would like to buy a house, and so they go to a lending institution of choice. To until they find someone that will, you know, quote, give them the money, unquote, to buy that house. Now, we have to do that as private individuals, yet there are those in let's say in the big cities especially, where they build skyscrapers, that are given that money by the government to build and then to amass a fortune on rent. Now, where is the justice in that?
It's part. It's almost like it's a license to steal, isn't it? I'm
just looking very practically at how the system is set up. These are things that go on. Now they advertise that the government gives away. They may come up with a figure $30 billion of loans. My God, they're stealing trillions. You see, they got everybody focused on the 30, just like they have everybody focused on the $50 billion in the Madoff scandal. When in actuality there are trillions of dollars, and you referred to an amount as 2,000 trillion, or it's probably like 2.2 quadrillion right now. And of that, there is. Now that is debt really that the Federal Reserve owns, okay? 2.2 quadrillion in debt. The derivatives market certainly is above $667 trillion, derivatives and hedge funds, and that's where all of this money that has disappeared out of the real estate market has gone. Public monies to the parks. Monies to the wetland preservation projects and farmland and schools and cemeteries. Every place where there is some public trust or a bond or some issue where there's money assigned to that, there's a money value assigned to it, they create a document that gets thrown into these pools of derivatives and hedge funds. You're not hearing that at all in the mainstream media, and that's what they're doing. My research shows that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easy to track. Once you learn what they're doing, it's easy to track the people who are doing it. Now, and I'm not saying just by company names or the names of corporations. I'm saying in the government, in the corporations, and the individuals that are part of this whole scheme. And their names may be in there intentionally as a player in the scam or in the scheme, whatever you want to call it. And they may unknowingly be in there because their identity has been stolen. And they use obfuscation techniques to or scramble the names, placing the middle name first, the first name last, the last name in the middle. You know, they try everything you can imagine, changing the middle name, exhausting all 26 letters of the alphabet, and on and on and on. And one deal attached to another through names and through cities, where all these transactions occur. I mean, I've talked about this on many shows. I've written about it. And it's come up under normal genealogical research on presidents. You know, you can say they're part of it. You know, you can see the proof. Now, it's not like that information is intended to be found, but it can be found. That's the whole point I'm making, is that they're going to these great extremes to cause us to believe something is so, when in reality, if you gain the experience, the practical experience in recognizing what and they're doing and how they're doing it and who's involved, a pattern emerges right away. And it mirrors what we've been told about our history, how our government operates, the rights that we have, which are all illusions, all of them. Because none of them are what God gave us.
Right. Well, yeah, God gave us, as Jefferson laid out, our law of nature and nature's God, our unalienable or unalienable rights come from the Creator. They don't come from man, and that man's institutions were only to be designed to protect those, the limitations on those that were to administer the government for commercial activities and other things, not to have the whole thing be reversed and to have become a complete enslavement of the people that created the entity to begin with, which is what's happened now. But I know that we in the mess that we're in right now, we have to make some kind of a choice, or we have to at least prepare something. And I've been really frustrated with this, Don. And I don't mean to go esoteric now again on us, but I've been wrestling with the transformation of a whole people. When I'm alone, I'm in a private place speaking with you in this conversation that other people are listening to, I feel really optimistic that we can have an effect. And then when I go out there in the world and I look at people's just going about their daily lives oblivious to what's really happening, I have to admit I have my doubts, which lends me to believe that hopefully what we can do is maybe a few of us can have an effect. I believe it's this Wednesday, aren't there supposed to be a whole bunch of supposed tea parties happening all over the country, mm-hmm. or something?
Tomorrow.
Oh, that is.
Yeah, tomorrow, Wednesday. Yeah.
Right. The thing that bothered. Well, I thought positive things about it, and then I realized, like the one here in Spokane. Well, a Republican congresswoman, I think her name is McMorris or something, is going to be speaking at it, and I'm going, gee, I thought this was a thing to wake people up to the wiles of people in government, not to allow some government member of this corruption to come out there and, you know, offer his or her two cents to the whole thing. I would think that this would be a time for people to wake up. So my point is that is this another distraction, could this type of a thing be used positively? But it almost appears that every single thing that we have is a solution. Like, for example, you said the monies that are there, that this continual creation of bonds and wealth transfer, whether it's being leaving the country or whether it's used here for other people's private personal gains. I'm beginning to wonder if again, philosophically, what this tells. What does this mean? I mean, is this something like the creator of the universe and God the Father saying, well, okay, guys, this is the way it is. The other way was one way. This is another way. But it still boils down, like the British way or the old feudal system was one way of slavery. This is just another way of slavery. And my way of getting your attention, saying, wake up, call on my name or call to me, and I will help you guys find a way. I'll show you a way out of this. But as long as we keep playing in the sewer, how are we going to find our way out of the sewer if we continue to stay in the thing?
Yeah, you want to hear my perspective on what's happening?
Yes, please.
This is not really paying attention to what's being said about it, and that almost in and of itself sounds like a contradiction, because we're hearing a lot about it. But in the alternative media, we're talking about what's going on, and so. We're still talking about it, you know. We're paying some attention to what is occurring. The question is it being done intentionally or unintentionally? Now, I think there was always an intention to do it, but it was meant to be silently, you know, done silently while we were asleep. Okay, and to a large extent, that has been accomplished by them. However, they didn't expect us to start waking up. And in the process of waking up, word is getting out what is going on, and a lot of them are getting caught. Not everyone in the world is putting up with this, you see. Okay? There's tremendous international political pressure on certain key individuals who are named repeatedly every time these discussions come up anywhere in an honest way. Okay? And you're talking about four administrations recently that have been involved in this. And it coincides, this all began, and I'm ignoring 1933 and really everything up until 1980, intentionally, because there was the Gold Commission report in 1980 recommending what should be done with the gold and what the monetary system should be based upon and all these things. Did you know Ron Paul was on that Gold Commission?
Wow, now that you say that, I remember that now, but until then, I wasn't thinking about it. That's
okay, now, right. Why did they have a Gold Commission? You see, this was done very secretly. There is a report available from that time period that somebody put out on the internet, and it seems very plausible, let's put it that way.
Okay.
It's basically a transcript of the actual meetings, discussions, and conclusions that were drawn. Now, in 1981 began President Reagan's Executive Order 13333. Which gave foreign intelligence agents, supposedly, this is what it meant, that they were able to set up businesses overseas to conduct their intelligence, and that they could set up corporations and offshore bank accounts. Now, the story of Wantagate was that they destabilized the ruble by working out a deal to buy them, say, for instance, in Holland, at a discount from Brinks, 23 cents on the dollar, turn around and sell them at the market rate of $1.20. Why anyone would want to buy those rubles for the going rate doesn't make sense. I mean, if you consider that in business, of course, the person selling it would want to sell it for as much as they could, but the person buying it would want to get it as cheap as they could. So they did get some discounts. Sometimes they made up their margin by buying them at 18 cents a ruble. And the word was that they even sold these to the Moscow government. That's some of the story that was out there on it. Now, to make a long story short, this supposedly imploded the Soviet Union. And was the cause of the fall of it. But this was all smoke and mirrors. This was designed, even the story, I think, was designed just to divert our attention away from the gold. Because it began happening the following year after that Gold Commission report in 1980, of which Ron Paul was also a member. I'm not saying he agreed to everything that the commission said based on the minutes that I read. However, that's just one aspect. Now, because we have begun to awaken, and because the truth is coming out about what's happening with the money, they have to ramp up the regulations to cover their backs, to give us something else to consider, something else to look at, while they continue on devising new ways to be corrupt. Because they've been caught at so many, you see.
True.
So I hope I didn't talk your head off there, but
no, I like that. That's brilliant. So let me ask you then. So, in your conclusion, is that how do you see a distinction between what happened in 1933 with supposed a gold transfer out of the country to cover the debts after the confiscation in 1933 by Roosevelt's phony executive order? With the 1980 event, where do you see the correlation? And then, what? Because obviously, you said the gold in Fort Knox is either down to a trillion or it's down to nothing. There may not actually be anything there left.
In other words, you're saying why did they have the commission? I think more than anything, that was just a publicity. I don't want to say stunt, But what else would you call it? it was an act, let's say. It was a script to follow for show.
So to make people think that there actually was a gold standard, that there was some substance behind it, and then that would mean that Ron Paul would have been party to some part of that fraud one way or the other. At least that would be inferred by because if the gold was gone in 33 and the silver standard was removed finally after Kennedy was assassinated by Johnson, and 64 was the last year of having the full amount of silver in each coin, removed down to partial percentages, I guess, from 65, 66.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what year was the last year. There was none in the coin. I think it was 68 or something. But then to have this gold standard in 1980, it would seem almost completely hypocritical that, or a slap in the face to everybody, hey, you're all so stupid. You're going to believe that there's gold here. There was something back in the stuff. It's already been transferred, or it's already been, what's the word? I can't think of the word. Anyways, it's already been raided it's gone. There's nothing there left. But to make people feel like there's something there or something of gold behind this country. Or maybe it was a shot across the bow for them to tell us that, hey, there is no gold standard. It's all based on debt, public policy, HJR 192, June 5th, 1933. There's no way to pay a debt. We can only discharge it. And since you guys are so stupid, we're still going to talk about something as if it's real, all the while making you all the chattel property, I'm sorry, the chattel collateral on this supposed debt, should you choose not to go back to the soil, go back to the land, go back to the law or the common law, and as long as you stay above that plane of existence, you're now going to be part of this game, and if you don't see any better, we're going to make you collateral on this and send you up to the wars and take your land. Is that not a possibility that was what they were putting in our face back then, and then we're seeing the result of that now?
Well, yeah, it's quite possible. I have to go back and read the report with specificity. At the time I was researching it, I was more interested on who some of the people were on the commission, you know.
Sure.
In any event, I know, wasn't it 1974 they started selling gold again? You know, they made gold something that people could invest in.
Yes, it was, I think, 74, because I got into the business in the jewelry mart back in 1979 in Los Angeles. And gold had been sold for some time again then. Up until 74, I think it was, you could only buy it for, jewelers could buy it for jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sell it through coin dealers, but they were all regulated.
You could buy
numismatics, and I think there was a restriction on all types of other coins. So yes, I think you're right.
You know, and then that gold and other trinkets that they sell as jewelry have markups averaging around 10,000%.
No, it's way outrageous. Yeah, even
you know,
at wholesale rates, it was not an investment. In 1979 and 80, when the ridiculous Ponzi schemes were taking place, and we had our second run around with the oil embargo. First one was 73, second one was 79. That's happened to be right when I went into the business, and I saw that fanaticism. People starting to buy, I think diamonds also signified it too, but gold went up to, at the time, $850 an ounce from its obviously set price by the government. And of course, the real commodities prices were higher. But I remember that the thing for me that really floored me was the price of diamonds. Because before I went into it, I thought diamonds were something of value. Then I realized that diamonds are a very common material.
Yes.
No big deal. That's why De Beers had to create this illusion of value. But I remember the ultimate diamond coming out of the GLA, Gemological Institute of America, one of the other labs, was a D-flawless diamond in 1980, at the time this all happened, was about $20,000. That's D for color and flawless in imperfections inside the stone. That's a 1-carat D-flawless diamond for, I think, $20,000. And I remember they ran them up to $60,000 for the same stone. And there were scam artists at the time going around selling these, and they would run, you know, they would some gold scams, but that's what gave people a bad taste in their mouth for actually holding on to real precious metals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's been a whole different deal. I forgot why I brought that out now. Oh, well, I'm sorry. At least I gave a little lesson there.
Well, we had been talking about, I had mentioned gold coming back to the market and then the outrageous prices that they're selling, you know, jewelry at.
Oh, the jewelry, that's right. Yeah. The jewelry was reflected in that, of course, yes, and the jewelry was way marked up. It was a very lucrative business, and that's why, to me, to this day, precious stones, I mean, diamonds and jewelry mean absolutely nothing to me. But as a commodity, in fact, gold, I have some friends of mine who speculate that gold will never be used as money again, although if it was worthless, why do the powers that be in the world want complete control over it? It absolutely has value. It always has had value, and just like silver is being artificially suppressed. In fact, one of the silver companies up here in North Idaho, I don't know how they went under here recently, but we all know that silver, based on, let's see, the book is called The Lost Book of the Coming Battle. It was republished from a reprint of 1897, where the price of silver up until, I guess it was 1870-something, was either at 16-to-1 or 15-to-1 ratio to gold. We're getting close to that today.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, Greg, we're about out of time. It was an interesting discussion. I don't know so much that we brought out solutions, but we did at least bring out a perspective of what some of this stuff means. I hadn't really heard anybody say what I said when I said, really, they're not really giving us anything of value, even though there's a debt being incurred. It's a debt that the bank never acquired, except maybe through a piece of paper, another piece of paper, you know.
Yes.
If it even exists. In fact, many times now it doesn't exist, and these monies are being sent elsewhere as anticipated capital, you know, as if they're actually in possession, because in their minds, they can turn around and seize the property, foreclose on the property, or claim it by eminent domain. That's another trick that they use. And, you know, the word unalienable rights or unalienable rights actually is the word inalienable, and that would literally mean to be unable, or let's say unable, to be taken away from,
yes,
or given away by the possessor. So it remains in the possession of the possessor.
You just opened up the next conversation we get together. You know why? Because I just thought about something, that if there's five elements of a contract that I've just learned how to control, and they are time, place, space, plane, and law form. And if part of those are that they've gotten us off of the soil, off of the earth, onto a different plane of existence on paper, like you were just saying, on paper,
mm-hmm,
then we literally then have participated in our own enslavement by not learning how to take control of those five things: time, place, space, plane, and law form. Allow the other side, through unilateral contracts, to bind us to this time, place, space, plane, and law form, while all we have to do, maybe, and I'm saying maybe, it could be this simple, all we have to do is get ourselves back onto the soil, onto the earth, and we now reset all five of those elements, as you said, with specificity, and I think, I don't know if you said with and particularity, because those are two words that have come together through other people earlier in our conversation. So if we could do those with specificity and particularity, take control of these contracts, you know, we might be able to start moving these things back onto the soil and eradicate this phony, fraudulent paper world, and then begin to show us as people to how to live in this world as free people, at least having control of our land and some of our substance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't originate that, by the way. That's from some other scholars, but it fits.
Well, again, I'm just looking at those words. I mean, you know, these are inalienable rights, which means that they cannot be taken from us. I'm repeating myself here, and they can't. We can't give them away.
So it's an illusion of them taking them from us and thus giving them away. But unfortunately, because we're used to the illusion, we allow it to actually come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
We walk away from the tangible because of the intangible.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just looking at it, you know, without beating around the bush, you know, without adding a lot of language to it. That one word stops two things from happening. And so the pieces of paper, what I'm implying is the pieces of paper that usurp that law are actually fraudulent and have no power.
Absolutely, yes. Well, this gets back to, this actually does go into some of the things that I've been learning from the standpoint that if we could get this as a matter of law as opposed to playing with facts, attorneys are only dealing with facts. If we can take this thing to an issue of law, and if some things I'm studying right now turn out to be true, we might actually find a simple solution to this, Don. And we might actually be able to take control of these pieces of land by addressing the law issues. Because the premise that I'd taken, I think when we first started talking a while back, was that if we could bind these people under their laws, and we could show that ours as unalienable or unalienable rights cannot be given away or taken by somebody else simply by binding the other side to their contracts, we might be able to just start taking control of this land back for people and freeing ourselves from this mindset. And maybe this is something that not only in a practical sense, but that we would start praying that we would find the answers to this thing in a very practical way, and this might be a blessing from God as part of our discussion tonight to help us start freeing ourselves.
Yeah, well, you know, the word inalienable, or as they used it in the Constitution, unalienable, mm-hmm. it means the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an expression of sovereignty.
Without a doubt, yes. It is. It's sovereignty. But I told you we have to be careful with that. Well, I didn't tell you on the air. We need to be careful with the word sovereignty right now, unfortunately. I mean, we know that the highest definition of Black's Law Dictionary of the authority or rights is the word sovereign and sovereignty. And unfortunately, that is the word that came out in that Missouri instrument as anybody using that word is a potential terrorist. So
you're kidding.
No, that was in that Missouri document. The young man here that was arrested for contempt of court, and because he said the word sovereignty in his statement in front of the judge, was visited by two FBI officers from the anti-terror squad, and they literally quoted from that instrument, though he had not ever seen the instrument until after he got out of jail. It was in his email box. When he opened the email, there was the instrument from the Missouri that was released by somebody in law enforcement in Missouri who had really was scared to death that was going to be common protocol and practice by people what used to be formerly peace officers, but now deemed law enforcement. That was one of the key phrases, was sovereign or sovereignty, one who believed he had a sovereign position based on the Constitution. So if you use the Constitution,
I'm saying under God.
And I would think that they would probably arrest God if they could.
Well, there's only one fool that would try that.
Okay. Well, I'm saying is that, or it's the fact that these guys deny the existence or the power of the Creator over their machinations, which is more or less what's really happening.
Yeah, we know what's happening. You know, well, when they made that law, they used the word themselves.
Absolutely.
You know, let's look at it for what it is.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yes, for themselves. They, well, but again, you know, and I'm kind of like out of words here on this thing. I just know that these guys, that Don, I almost see like the creator of the universe is saying, okay, you guys, when are you going to just look to me to give you the answers, or when are you going to look to me to see that you have a problem, and that you can't just solve it by going to a political rally, or writing a letter to your congressman or senator, or making a phone call? What if you would actually, you know, corporately, wherever you are, get together and say, okay, I screwed up. I need help. Would you please come help me and heal my land, or heal our land, and return life back to us again, so we don't have to be slaves anymore? And almost that's how I feel like I'm at that place right now. I have a lot of answers, and we're testing them out, but it still boils down to, is my strength sufficient for me to do this, or do I need to hand this back to the Creator to say, okay, you got me this far, help me find the answers, but help not just me, but other people, you know, like you, Don, and others that have sought the higher good for everybody, that, you know, that our land would be healed and the people would be healed. And I don't know, Don, I really feel optimistic when I speak, like I said earlier, with you, and I just wish that the people would wake up and realize that they've bowed to something that's not real, and then seek the real, and hopefully maybe we point it out to them a little bit. Maybe they'll read their contracts, or maybe they'll go to, like, I you know, read your website and learn from what they can. All I know is that I guess I ultimately says this: I need to turn myself back over to the authority of God and say, I'm going to do what my part is, and then you help me do the rest. Because other than that, I've just been frustrated.
Yeah, I understand. Well, we could do a whole show on that topic too.
I know we can't, so I guess not tonight.
Yeah. Well, we're out of time, Greg. I want to thank you for being on the show, and I want to let the listening audience know that you're going to be with us again next Monday. So,
yes. Okay, Don, can I get my email address out if anybody wants to send me an email?
Oh, absolutely. Go ahead.
My email address is my initials for Greg Pappas. That's GP and the word truth, TRUTH, at gmail.com. GPTruth at gmail.com. And if anybody, I don't get to my emails all the time, but just bear with me and just put in the subject line the name of your show or your name, Don, and I'll know where it came from, and I'll respond to them.
Okay. Well, we look forward to your next visit, and let me know if you do get any email. I'd be interested in how many people are maybe struggling with an issue that they don't completely understand. And your goal is to make people aware of the rights that they have, and get it in the proper perspective, because it is a two-sided game working, you know, represented to work in the to the benefit of the people when it's actually working for its own self-gratification.
Yes. That's our ultimate objective. Anybody who wants to send me an email, I'll share some of my links and things that I work on and our perspectives, and if we do have a victory here shortly with a signed order from a judge, you'll be the first one to know, Don. I'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah, we'll bring you on to cover that, too. How's that?
That would be great. That would be wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm going to say goodnight until I see you next week. Join us tomorrow night when my guest will be Mr. Michael Anthony. In the meantime, I would like to thank Donna Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible here on BBSRadio.com, Seth Hendrick for the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.